Only a matter of knowing how to shoot a gun. Nothing big about that.
Hey, listener, welcome back. It's episode 10. We're reviewing Magnificent Seven, now in theaters, comparing it to both the original Magnificent Seven and Seven Samurai. And we'll be fully spoiling the movie, so be warned. We dig TV, we dig remote control, we dig the furry freak brothers and the Twilight Zone. We dig Marvel and DC, we dig Run DMC, we dig Renegade Soundwave and AC. But you want to roll it? You want to just bust into it? Are you fucking ready to bust?
I mean, yeah. What else are we doing?
I mean, fucking busting feels so damn good.
That's all we're talking about today, right? These fucking movies?
These three. So we've got, boom.
So I've got about like 5 minutes of
boom,
material.
Magnificent Sam.
We've
got Seven Samurai, Magnificent Seven, 1960, Magnificent Seven, 2016. We decided as an experiment to watch them in reverse order. So I watched them old to new, Samurai, then old Seven, then new Seven. You watched them in old to new, or new to old. So you watched the remake first, and then you watched the other ones, and neither of us had either seen any of them until then.
Correct, Amundo.
Here's my theory, or my theory going into this, was that I would really not like the remake, because it's kind of like watching the movie after you read the book, but I expected that you would really like the remake and have a richer overall experience, because it's like reading the book after seeing the movie, and you kind of like you get the movie plus.
That's a fair theory.
Yeah, how'd it work out?
It did not work out that way. I mean, seeing the remake, the 2016 version, without seeing the other ones, I thought it was fine. And I was like, this is a good movie. I mean, it's fun. It's entertaining. And then with each older version I saw, I hated the new one more and more. So just in comparison, looked more like a piece of dog shit.
Well, what you wrote in your notes is the new one sucks balls, and watching each source material made me angrier that it sucked. So it sounds like you hated it immediately.
Well, no. I mean, I didn't love it. It was very fine and kind of what I expected. I saw it on Friday. We're recording on Monday.
Okay. I also saw it on Friday, and I noticed even not having re-seen, you know, without having watched those movies, I had still the same experience. We're just, you know, 2 days removed. Thinking about it more, I was like, yeah, I really can't remember much that I liked about it, and the other movies definitely have stayed with me so much more, and so it's almost as if I've watched them since then, and the comparison is damning.
Yeah, which is, I was really hoping you'd be able to fill me in on the details of the remake, because, yeah, it's pretty much all blur right now.
Well, recap what happens in all the movies, Seven Samurai is set in 16th century Japan. And it's a village that is getting raided by bandits. They kind of get notice. They kind of like peek, and they hear that these guys are going to attack them when their grain is ripe or whatever. So they've got like, I don't know, a month or two. And so they decide the only way to solve the problem is to go hire some samurai to protect them. They get only like samurai who really don't have any better prospects and who are kind of goodwill, like good natured. It's a ragtag bunch.
Yeah, they have nothing to offer the farmers.
Yeah, all they're basically going to do is just feed them for the duration of the time that they're protecting them. And then, you know, the bandits come back and the samurai help them drive them off. And in The Magnificent Seven, pretty straight adaptation. It's called a remake, but it really, I feel, is more of an adaptation.
A remake, you would think it would be the same setting and everything. So I would say adaptation as well.
Pretty
smart adaptation too, to bring it, make it as American as possible. And
Yeah, if you wanted to make an American version, that's really the only thing you could do, I think, is Gunslingers. Yeah. Unless you wanted to set it way back in, like, Native Americans. But I don't really know how that would work. But then mm-hmm. you could probably do it fairly similar, more, you know, spear and arrows kind of thing. But anyway, remake, 1960s, reset in, like, the 1860s, I think, or 1870s. Old West, but like almost the end of the Old West. So you again have all these guys who are kind of like, you know, modern day Ronin. They, you know, they were in the West and they've kind of made their money as, you know, bounty hunters and whatnot. And now they're kind of realizing they've got nothing out of life. And so they go south of the border into Mexico to save a village that has bandits coming back. And it's actually really similar to, A Bug's Life, where you get that opening scene of them, you know, roughing them up, and they're like, we're coming back. And again, they, you know, actually, that one has a bit of a twist, because in that one, they drive off the bandits, and then the bandits kind of cut a deal with the, what's it called?
Villagers.
The village. So it's kind mm-hmm. of like, you know, pure honor is why they come back and, you know, drive off bandits again. In the newest one, it's not bandits.
So stupid.
It's an industrialist.
It's capitalism.
Yeah. It was a real fucking subtle. I couldn't really get the screenwriter's political angle on this one, but it's a capitalist who is driving them off their land, and so they hire some gunslingers to murder their own sheriff and then protect them from the inevitable splashback from that. And then, mm-hmm. you know, again, same situation though.
And I mean, going into it, I knew that, or I read about it a little bit, that there was, you know, not so subtle discussions that, you know, capitalism is the real enemy there.
Ooh,
but I didn't realize that in the opening 5 minutes, they would explicitly say that.
Well, you know, it was one of those situations where, like, 20 seconds into the film, because, you know, we've gone through this. For me, I've gone through this like, three and a half hour black and white subtitled film, which I really liked, and then a 1960s Western. And so the opening few minutes of just the cinematography, like modern, you know, wide angle, great shots of the landscape in this old town. And I was like, man, I'm in it. I am ready. And then, like, two yep. minutes in, fucking Peter Sarsgaard comes in as like the most cartoonish businessman possible. He looks like a vampire basically. And he,
yeah, all like sniffly and sweaty. And like, I guess they're supposed to be, maybe he was on drugs the whole time. I don't know.
But... Oh yeah. Maybe he was a cokehead, but, I mean, it was just like so over the top. I mean, if he had a longer mustache, he could twirl it just the entire scene. Sans dialogue, just remove the dialogue. And he gives this big speech about how capitalism is, you know, next to godliness, and, you know, gold is God and all this shit.
And, in a church.
In a church, mm-hmm. which he's brought his gang of goons who all are all toting guns.
Yeah, all faceless, nameless.
And yeah, that completely turned me off. It took me a long time for the movie to win me, like, back, at least to, like, back to a starting point. Like, I was at a deficit at that point.
So do you want to start with the newest one then? Start there.
Sure. Why'd you hate it?
Yeah. Well, kind of like you said. Well, first off, I'll say I am glad I saw the new one first without having seen the 1960 version or Seven Samurai.
It allowed you to briefly like it?
Yes, exactly. It allowed me to like it in its own way, and it stood by its, you know, stood on its own. And it was enjoyable. I mean, it was a blockbuster. It was a summer film, I guess, at the end of
summer. How much did you like it, though? Like, did you, like, really get into it, or was it just kind of like...
Yeah, no. It was exactly how I expected it to be. I was like, this is going to be a fun movie. It's going to be dumb. It's not going to have anything to say, but the visuals will be cool, the action will be cool, and Denzel Washington's great to watch in film, so I enjoyed
yeah.
it. I left in a fine mood. I wasn't angry or anything. But if I'd seen the first two and then watched it, I probably would have been like, this was a waste of fucking money. I would have complained to the manager.
I mean, I watched the other two first, and what I liked about the new one is it still had the same exact feeling. So basically, our experiment proves it really doesn't matter what order you watch movies in, if you watch the old one first or the new one first, because I felt the same way. It was enjoyable. There were parts that were really annoying and grating, and there were parts that were fun. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say there was in terms of like anything that rose above the level of negativity I experienced in some moments of the movie, there wasn't really anything that rose to that level on the positive side, but there was a lot of like decent stuff. The best thing about the new one is Ethan mm-hmm. Hawke.
Really?
Yes. I really liked his character. Goodnight Robichaux.
The name is incredible. I was really surprised to hear that that was just a name they made up. I thought that was a name from one of the original characters.
Oh, yeah. Well, it sounds like a name from fucking Dodgeball or an Adam McKay movie or something. Like Cotton McKnight.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of goofy, but it was a cool name.
Oh, it flows. You can
say your piece about Ethan Hawke, and then I have my retort.
Okay, well, I liked Ethan Hawke. I thought, you know, from my perspective, I had already seen the 1960s version, and I thought he was a really good evolution of the character of Lee, who is the kind of fey, old Boston Celtics mascot guy. He's always had that little vest, you know, and the gloves.
Little little gloves on.
Yeah, yeah. And because he had PTSD, but it wasn't big of a deal in the movie, I guess, but I really liked, I thought Ethan Hawke portrayed the character really well, and I thought he was just an interesting character, someone who was a Confederate sharpshooter, who then his best friend is an Asian and a black bounty hunter, and who, you know, has severe PTSD to the point that he can't shoot some guy who's escaping from him in an early ruckus, and who I felt it was a good sense of him. I really liked the fact that he had a really good relationship with Billy Rocks, his partner in, he was kind of almost the Don King to his Mike Tyson, but he split everything 50-50, and he was obviously, they have an extremely codependent relationship, and it was kind of sweet in a way.
Yeah, I did like their relationship. I liked that they both kind of shared like drug addictions.
Yeah, basically they were smoking weed together the whole movie, right?
Yeah, they're smoking the chronic, and I did like the one scene when Ethan Hawke leaves and then Billy Rock starts like drinking heavily.
Yeah, that's true.
Inconsolable. So yeah, that was a good part, that they had a good relationship, but I did like that part. But
yeah, what's your retort?
I'll say, I mean, I love Ethan Hawke as an actor, so going into it I was excited for him to see him. And hearing the name of the character really got me excited too. But I'll say that it did not live up to those two expectations I'd set upon it.
Is it because his arc is so predictable?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, he's the only character in there really with an arc, as far as I noticed. So I appreciated that he actually did change throughout the movie. But it was just, I feel like I'd seen it before. And, like, it was very, so, like, he leaves, like, oh, obviously he's going to come back.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's no doubt about it, and it kind of makes it a little bit boring.
Exactly. And it just felt like they were really trying. And having seen now the 1960 version, and I get what you're saying, that it is kind of a neat extrapolation of that character, that the lead character that was kind of just not dug into very much in the 1960 version, but I think it was kind of like overdone. Like I prefer more how they did it in the 1960 version, where it's like, we get that he has problems. I mean, I guess there kind of been maybe a little bit more digging into why he has those problems, but I kind of just accepted him as being a cowardice character with some issues with guns, and then his redemption was a lot more believable, I felt, than Ethan Hawke's. Because Goodnight comes back. He says he's going to leave because he can't shoot a gun. He's become what he hates, which I hated that line. I don't even know what it meant.
He said, I become what I hate, a coward.
Yeah, but it's like, it wasn't really set up. Like, who likes cowards?
Kind of disgust for cowards.
Yeah, like, that's just an obvious thing. Like, everyone hates cowards and whatever. And then he comes back, but he's like, he comes back and he shows, like, no ill effect. Like, yeah, he comes back and he's just like, yeah, dick swinging, shooting guns, everything. But the lead character, he just has, like, a brief moment of redemption that felt a lot more real. Like, he's scared through the first few gunfights, and then he has a moment where he's, you know, steals himself up and
breaks, yeah, he really only is, like, hard for, like, 3 seconds.
Yeah, he breaks into a room, gets a couple kills, and frees some of the villagers, and then he comes out and is immediately shot.
Yeah.
But it felt a lot like he got himself all geared up for that one moment, whereas, like, Ethan Hawke seems like he just came back as a different character.
Well, they almost retrofitted it because, you know, what I thought was interesting, I guess, you know, in kind of neutral in terms of whether it was good or not, but it was interesting to see how they took characters and from all three films, you know, would combine characters, would
mm-hmm.
give some traits to others. Because, like, they have the Kyozo character, who's the boss-ass samurai in the first movie, and that's kind of transferred to Britt in the second movie, the knife expert. And then mm-hmm. that's kind of split in the third movie into Ethan Hawke is the badass in terms of being, like, the best sharpshooter, you imagine. I mean, they're all kind of hit every single shot, so I guess it doesn't matter. And then it's also split with Billy Rocks, who's the knife guy and who does the cool knife standoff.
Mm-hmm.
And then his re-entry was really the same thing as Harry Luck's re-entry in the second movie, where he you know, comes back in just, like, apropos of nothing, riding his horse in, and that guy immediately gets shot. I don't even know if he accomplishes anything.
Not really. that kind of made me upset to watch that.
Yeah, because the guy's stuck outside, and he's like, I'll save you, Chris! And he gets shot immediately, and then Chris has to come out of cover to come pull him into the building.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish he had a little bit more redemption, but I guess, again, it's kind of more realistic for something like that.
Yeah, he did get a classic death in the arms scene where he's like, tell me I wasn't a sucker, Chris. Tell me there's really gold in them hills.
Yeah, I really like that character too, just because he had, like, the clearest motivation for being there. Like, very acceptable.
Yeah, and I feel like that was something that was one of those diminishing returns that even in the 1960s version, I felt like there was a little less believability of motivation. And in the new movie, mm-hmm. there's almost no sense of why any of them are there. Because, you know, the thing about the new one is it is kind of a post-Avengers version
definitely.
Of this movie. So instead of, you know, a bunch of old gunslingers off the scrap heap and young guys who don't know better and can't do better, they literally, in their ranks, have two living legends. So they have Denzel Washington is a shit-hot crack shot, and he's a bounty hunter. They have Chris Pratt, who's a shit-hot crack shot and a gambler. Ethan mm-hmm. Hawke, a shit-hot sharpshooter and a legend. Like,
shit
he's
hot.
Legendary.
Yeah. Angel of Death. He has cool nicknames.
And beyond that, he has a good job. He's making a shitload of money just setting up, like, kind of trick shot duels with Billy Rocks. So,
yeah, he's a hustler.
Yeah, well, he's not, I mean, he's not really a hustler. I guess he's a hustler, but, I mean, it's honest. I mean, he's got a good business going, basically, and he's terrified of guns. So it's like, why the fuck would he agree to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, yeah. Billy Rocks, you know, I mean, I guess he's going to go where Ethan Hawke's character goes, but it doesn't make sense. Vasquez is an outlaw who, what the guy just says, oh, I won't be chasing you if you do this with me. It's like, well, okay, but he still has like $12,000 on his head or something.
Yeah, like there's still going to be every other bounty hunter, right? Like, why not just kill Denzel Washington and then move on with it?
Yeah. And
like
then,
he had the jump on them both.
Yeah, there's Jack Horn, who's another living legend, living in the mountains, and he's like, oh, okay, I'll come with you guys, why not? And then there's Red Harvest, who's the Comanche guy, who actually by the time they got to him, I forgot. I thought they were already up to seven. So I was like, ooh, a new plot point. This guy's gonna, you know, be kind of the harbinger for a whole Comanche tribe is on their tracks, and they, you know, a little bit of an extra bit of plot going. But instead, he just immediately like, yeah, I got nothing better to do. Why not?
Yeah, he just appears out of nowhere. I really hated that. That his jumping on board. It was really just like, hey, we need a seventh guy. Let's just go over here, and oh, we found one. Very cool.
Yeah, it's well. The thing is, and that's another thing about the new movie is that, I mean, the old one had everything absolutely locked down. Everything you needed to know for a payoff later in the movie was in there. And I thought even the 1960s version did a lot of going through the motions without making any sense. So, for instance, there's a scene where they're all chowing down on that great Mexican food. They've got, like, carne asada. It's like, damn, this fucking village has some beef going on. And the guy's like...
got the meats.
Yeah, and the guy, as they're chowing down, he's like, you know what they've been eating since we got here? Tortillas and beans. And it's like, that's fucking good. So, for one thing, I don't pity them because that's delicious. And then, you know, the payoff is the very next scene where they're like, oh, well, let's give them our food. And it's like, well, that wasn't paid off. In the original movie, you get that these guys are eating just the millet of the rice, which is like the crappy, like, husk of the rice, basically. So, like, the least nutritious bit because they have to save the rice because they have nothing. And so there is, like, a really cool class clash between the samurai who feel like they're really doing these guys a favor and then the farmers who then once they realize how much they're sacrificing to keep them there, they feel kind of guilty about it, and it's a kind of a cool payoff of them kind of understanding each other's cultures.
Well, there's the other bit too, is that they I think it's the wild card character in Seven Samurai talking about Kikuchiyo, how like the farmers can't be trusted. They'll tell you they only have rice, and then they really are hiding the good stuff. And then by the end of the movie, it shows that they do have, like, actual food and, like, sake and stuff. They've been holding it the whole time, which adds, I thought, like, a lot of needed background and depth to the farmers as a character that, like, the new movie didn't even... Like, the villagers were not even characters. They were, like, none of them even said anything, I don't think, other than the hot chick for one.
Yeah, well, that was fucking excellent speech in that movie, and it was almost like the thesis of the movie screamed at the camera.
I loved that character.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like the whole point of the story is like this: war is hell, and that like dishonor begets dishonor. So the fact that these guys are basically prey for the bandits means that they have to act dishonorably, and that then kind of sets the stage for the samurai to do something really incredible, which is trying to give them back their honor. Not just save them, but really, you know, kind of make them whole, which is kind of the arc of like any good movie, is someone kind of being broken and becoming whole. Now tell me this though, because you watched that more recently, did the scene with the giving them rice come after that speech or before it?
The scene of giving the rice? Which scene giving the rice?
The scene where they realize the farmers have been eating millet the whole time and they start passing the rice around, like the rice balls.
Yeah, that came after Kukicho had that discussion. Because he brings that up when they're still in the village. And I think it's when he's drunk, when he's first like brought up into the group. I think so. Shit, maybe I don't know.
No, but it's definitely before that. Rant after they bring out all the samurai gear and the terms. They realize that they've been killing samurai as they've been escaping battles or something. And it's like really bizarre scene.
Yeah, but he definitely has that rant before they pass out the rice and share it with the villagers, and then it's not to the very end. Yeah, it's great. And then at the very end, after like right the night before the final showdown, is when the farmers bring out all the other treats and sake and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just there's so much like complexity to it, and I love that they. I mean, it's a different situation, but it's cool because they kind. I mean, they almost treat. It's a harder classification. It's more of a caste system. So there's like, you know, the farmers are the bottom, the bandits are above them, the samurai are above them. It's almost like if the farmers were mice, the bandits would be cats, and the, you know, the samurai would be, we got to get some fucking dogs in here to deal with these cats.
Yeah, and get some weasels. And then how do you deal with the weasels? Get some gorillas, and then
the winter comes around, freeze to death.
Gorillas all freeze to death.
Yeah, and the new one had none of that.
No,
it
none of that.
It had absolutely none of that. It had no sense of, for one thing, the villagers' backs aren't to the wall. Half of them do leave town. And so they could do that. I mean, they could sell their land for apparently a third of what it's worth, but who gives a fuck? You can still get out of there and not get murdered.
Yeah, the new one seems to be completely hinging on one woman's desire for revenge.
Yes.
Poor man's Jennifer Lawrence.
I was going to say, I definitely noticed her being like Jennifer Lawrence, but I would not say poor man. I would say Jennifer Lawrence is the poor man's Jennifer Lawrence.
I'll get out of here. What are you talking
Jennifer
about?
Jennifer Lawrence. No, I mean, this lady, she did everything Jennifer Lawrence did, but she acted slightly more believably. So
that's only because she wasn't Jennifer Lawrence, so you weren't thinking of Jennifer Lawrence the whole time.
Yeah, but Jennifer Lawrence can't act.
Don't get me started.
Don't get me started.
I'm not a big Jennifer Lawrence fan, but
you sound like you're a pretty big Jennifer Lawrence fan.
I'm sure she would do just as good a role.
No, she would do more poorly. You'd be like, oh, hey, it's Jennifer Lawrence trying her best to do an accent.
She would probably eat up the scene a little bit more, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, she can cry, and then she can deliver lines unbelievably, and that's kind of her two talents. It's like, okay. Speaking of Jennifer Lawrence and actors who I hate, this the remake made me realize I hate Chris Pratt.
Yes, 100%. Well, I will say I hate Chris Pratt in his newfound action dramatic role.
Yes,
because he's still very funny and goofy to me. So if he still did like comedies, I would love it because he's naturally funny. He's got great comedic timing. But it just kind of takes you out of, like, any cool action scene because he's just a fucking goofball.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the script kind of caters to that, and it's really fucking weird. It's hard to get a grip on what exactly we're watching because any scene that's dominated by Chris Pratt is, like, almost like a parody scene. Like, he has a scene with the really short guy who took his horse, and he's like, oh, I thought I dreamed that dream about a leprechaun stealing my horse. I was like, okay, I guess that, are we doing that now?
Yeah, him with like those two guys trying to rob him. He does that weird magic trick and it's like, oh, here's me with.
Yeah, which reminds me of the ending of fucking Guardians of the Galaxy where he just starts dancing and that's enough to distract the villain to, you know. And it's, I mean, that seems to be his whole shtick is that he basically acts like tonally a fish out of water. So it's just like extremely abrupt and jarring, and like I hate it because it's basically that's just ruining the scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think the entire remake had that weird tone problem that the other ones did much better because they really like addressed the reality of the situation of, you know, people in this town getting murdered.
Yeah.
Whereas just like murdered and the women getting raped and their lives are terrible, and the new one just had like a weird kind of, throughout it was just kind of light until the end, of course, when you're trying to be dramatic, but it's like you didn't earn that. You can't be serious now after being like kind of slapsticky and shoot 'em up the entire movie.
Well, it was whiplash because you go from the stupidest scene in the movie. Do you know what I'm talking about? The stupidest scene in the movie is Chris Pratt's final scene.
Every scene. Oh, yeah. God damn it. That was so stupid.
That's the thing is, I thought, like you said, there's kind of no reason for Ethan Hawke, Goodnight Robotshaw's arc. He runs back into town, he shoots for a little while, and then he gets killed. Yeah. What I thought his whole arc, where the whole purpose of him coming back was going to be is, oh, I'm the only guy who can hit that Gatling gun from over here. So that he's going to get up in the tower and snipe the folks on the Gatling gun. So he gets up in the tower. He shoots, like, 50 yards short of the Gatling gun to shoot all the people off of Chris Pratt, whose plan was, I'm just going to ride right up to the Gatling gun where there's a dozen guys, but if I get shot a lot, that's fine. Like, he's accepted that, but he's going to have a stick of dynamite on him. He's going to kneel down to almost die. He's going to light a cigarette. They're not going to kill him. And then he's going to slump over and secretly light the dynamite. Meanwhile, he's perforated by how many bullets? And then he's going to get up and throw the dynamite. And it's like, well, Harry, what if they shot you in the face?
Yeah, it's just, oh, God, it's so stupid. Like, why did they let him get that close for any reason? Like, what? Why did they light a cigarette for any reason?
Yeah, it's like, all right, the only thing he could be doing is carrying dynamite here. The guy's about to shoot him. The other guy's like, no, don't shoot him. It's like, come on, like, why are the stars aligning to let this idiotic plan work out? It would be fine. I would be fine if they pulled a little fistful of dollars and he had put some type of, you know, armor on. So he knew it was going to be a suicide run, but he was kind of making sure that at least he got close enough to get it lit.
Pulling all Back to the Future 3.
Yeah, that's where that originated. But no, that was, I think, unforgivably stupid. And I think even if the rest of the movie was fucking brilliant, that would have been enough to piss me off.
Totally. And what I thought, which made a lot more sense to me and within the context of the movie, was that he was going to ride up on him, do all this stuff, do maybe a card trick as a distraction, and then Denzel was going to be the one sneaking up behind him and pop him all in the back of the head with his gun. Because the whole movie, he was like a guy doing sleight of hand, like, look over here, and then I'm going to shoot you. But in his final act of courage, he was going to sacrifice himself for that trick to let somebody else take the glory and finish the job. But
yeah,
no, he's fucking Superman, taking six bullets in the gut and still moving.
Well, it's the same. Yeah, and it's like, the thing is, even if that could have happened, there's no way you could have planned on that happening. And if you could have, I mean, it's just the, why did the rest of the movie even happen if that's something you could plan on? And of course, you know, and to compound the stupidity, you've got Goodnight Robichaux, legendary marksman. Why doesn't he shoot the Gatling gun, which apparently the notoriously inaccurate Gatling gun is able to fill like 12 bullets directly into his chest.
Yeah, like boom, 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 right, consecutive shots. And and Billy Rocks too.
Some stray bullets as it's firing them out there hit them. It's like he gets full on as if they're standing 10 feet away with the damn thing.
Also, like, so he sacrificed himself to take out the three guys that were trailing Chris Pratt on his death mission to blow up the dynamite. But, like, why? Where was Denzel that whole time? Why wasn't he, like, lying in wait and then take out those three guys easy peasy like he did the entire friggin' movie? And then Goodnight and Billy didn't have to get fucking murked for no reason.
And on top of that, why the fuck did they bring a Gatling gun? The whole thing that is so annoying.
Yeah,
so
why didn't they just pop that in the beginning?
Yeah, why
that
not? All right, we brought a Gatling gun, you're done. You know, because, okay, a half an hour before that, whenever they got to town, Denzel's like, all right, here's the thing, guys. They're going to underestimate us, and we're going to use that against them. I'm like, no, Denzel, they're going to overestimate you. They're going to bring 200 people and a Gatling gun in case you happen to, with your, you know, 50 villagers, kill these 200 people.
Yeah, because they were waiting to use it after the 200 guys, I guess, died, instead of just, like, clearly they didn't care about the city at all, like, just lay waste to it with the Gatling gun.
Yeah.
Call it a night.
I mean, you have to wreck that stuff anyway. You're just there for the, like, the gold or the coal or whatever anyway, right?
Yeah, no one cares. They clearly don't care. And it's just, I feel like that's a thing that's been happening in, like, old movies set in the old times where the Gatling gun is like the ultimate weapon that they bring out at the end, and then you have to defeat the Gatling gun. Happened in Shanghai Nights. It happened in Sherlock Holmes. Yeah.
It happened in Sherlock Holmes. It happened in Sherlock Holmes. I don't remember that either.
Yeah. Like,
it also happened in the Last Samurai.
Yeah.
And The Last Samurai was especially stupid because I was like, you just let like hundreds of men die for no reason. You could have just wasted everyone with the Gatling gun.
Yeah, it's like this weird ultimate weapon that they are using the same exact way in every movie, which is like after you think they're losing, the bad guys are losing, whoops, they pull out a Gatling gun and now they're winning instead of just using it in the beginning to win easily.
Yeah, and stuff like that just kind of makes it, I mean, especially if you compare the Seven Samurai, what I really loved about that movie is that there was like so much, and I mean, you could have cut a lot of it and still had, you know, as a better movie than this, but there was so much of the planning, and they're like, all right, we're going to cut off, you know, we'll build a fence here. They can't get through. We're going to, you know, flood this river. We're going to break this bridge. They're only going to be able to come from this way. We're going to let two of them come in when they rush, and then all of us are going to fill the road with spears so that they have to retreat, and then those two guys are fucked because they're just going to, you know, surround them once they get to the village. And it was like, that was, I wouldn't have thought of that. And I love when movies think of solutions to problems that I wouldn't think of, because then it's, you're impressed, you know?
Right. It felt like real military planning.
Yeah, whereas this one is like, the you know, they do some amount of they do the ditches in the ground to shoot out of, and they do the dynamite, but the dynamite is like such a, like kind of an obvious thing. Like, you found dynamite, oh, well, maybe we should blow up the guys. And it's also dependent on them coming from one specific angle, which they just assumed. They in no way guaranteed they would come that way.
Right, and that's true. I didn't even really think of that, having seen that one first. There was the city, the way it was set up, didn't seem to have any, like, one angle to attack. Which, yeah. I mean, in Seven Samurai, they, like, meticulously show you, here's the north side, here's the west side, here's the east side. It really brings you into the planning and, like, sets up the stage so perfectly that you know exactly what's happening. Even, like, when they're fighting on one side, you kind of, in the back of your head, as if you're there, know what could be happening on the other posts. But yeah, this one, they just arbitrarily attack from the main road.
Yeah, from this big field, we're going to come this way. And
stupidly go through, like, the city of tents that are people are so obviously hiding in. Yeah. It's like, you're fucking insane.
Yeah, and spread out as much as possible over, like, the separate bits of dynamite.
It's fucking Home Alone.
The reason I brought up all of that was because it's mood whiplash. You have this stupid scene with Chris Pratt, and then you get this incredibly dark scene with Denzel Washington, who's like, yeah, you raped my mother and my sisters, and now I'm going to rape you. Well, not that he's going to rape him, but, you know, he's choked him to death. And the guy, you know, he's about to pull his gun out to get him back. And at that point, I was like, they're going so dark. I actually expected that he would shoot Denzel, because I feel like, you know, morally speaking, you know, Denzel has a point. But movie-wise, you know, you're showing this kind of becoming evil moment for Denzel. So I felt like movie logic-wise, he should pay a price for that. And it could have ended with both of them dying in there.
Yeah, which would have been the most surprising thing of the entire movie, instead of like the thing we've seen a million times before, where guys gets a guns out and then a gunfire shot goes out and you think it's that gun, but it's another gun you didn't even see.
Oh, they twist. I think the worst sin you can do these days, and it's one thing I hate about The Walking Dead, is off-screen gunshots. I fucking hate off-screen gunshots. They're bullshit. They're completely anathema to tension. All they are is a surprise. Oh, something! A gunshot just fired. Oh, and then the whole rest. I mean, obviously the movie's over, but then the whole, you know, in Walking Dead, the whole rest of the show, you're like, well, anytime there's tension, someone might just shoot them from off-screen that I haven't seen yet.
Yeah. And I can't think of that happening once in either other movie.
No, I mean, Seven Samurai, like, they don't have diabolical guns. Gunshot in the sense that the good guys get shot sometimes, from unseen sources, but they're like in a gunfight, so.
But they're not really unseen. Like,
yeah, it's understood that there are bandits all around.
Right. So it's not
so
just
like.
It's
kind of like if you're on Omaha Beach and your guy gets shot, you're like, oh, okay, well, that'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, Seven Samurai had not as many guns, but
yeah, he had three guns in the movie. That's kind of, that's kind of the difference. If you talk about, you know, the idea of these big, you know, the first movie had three guns in the whole movie, And then the new movie has just like fucking guns on guns, and it's again a question of like, did these guys really need that much help? They have a fuckload of rifles at this village.
Yeah, and the middle one, the samurai, the gunsmen have guns, but the villagers don't really have that many guns.
Yes.
So when they do,
no guns to begin with. They have a little bit of money
to begin with,
so they're not quite as poor.
But when they do actually like stage their uprising, it's mostly with like their shovels and stools and stuff.
Yeah, the guy starts. He's like, "I'm gonna fight," and he just grabs a stool and it's like, "All right, well, you can kill a man with that, I guess."
Yeah, and they all beat him up, I guess. I did note that too. It is interesting. Like in the first one, Seven Samurai. So the samurai have swords, which is really like I guess the equivalent of the gun in the later movies.
Mm-hmm.
They have swords, but like no one really else has a sword other than a samurai, and I guess the bandits, of course. But in the Magnificent Seven 1960 version, I think they make a remark that kind of everyone has a gun, but you're looking for people who are skilled with a gun in a way that will be beneficial to them.
Oh, in terms of when they're looking for people in town, when they're like hiring people?
Yeah, when they go to Yul Brynner, the three villagers, and they're asking him for people with guns. I'm pretty sure he makes some remark about how everyone has a gun, but you need someone who's like actually skilled with it.
Yeah, that movie actually had a decent amount of. I was kind of down on it. Just to get down to it, which was your favorite of these three?
It's hard. I mean, I think like Seven Samurai is definitely the best movie and the most complete. But I do have like a lot of love for the 1960 Magnificent Seven, just because I think westerns just kind of give me a movie boner.
Well, I mean, there are things that movie did better than Seven Samurai. For one thing, the score is fucking fantastic. It's so damn good.
Yeah, it's really the iconic song of westerns.
Yeah, right? I mean, the thing is, I had not seen that movie, yet I was aware of it, and I was kind of just humming it to myself after watching Seven Samurai. I'm like, all right, it's coming. And I was not even 100% sure it was from The Magnificent Seven, but I kind of just knew. And then when we were heading out to go see the new one in theaters, and I'm just like, dun, 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 dun. And I was like, man, I fucking hope they play that song. And they don't until the
very credits. End?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to confirm that because I thought that was the case.
Yeah, they played it over like the cast, recap credits. And so it's kind of a great way to end the movie, even though with all respect to who did it, like James Horner or something? The new score, I don't remember any of it.
No, there was like some weird, they kept repeating one like note when Denzel was doing cool stuff, but nothing like the score from the original. And I was noticing like throughout the entire, they play it like in five different ways throughout the entire movie. Like there's a slower version.
The old
just
one?
Just that same riff, yeah, in the 1960 one.
Oh yeah, I mean if you're going to use it, fucking use it. It's just so good. And it's
they
I
get
mean, it's
every drop out of it.
Yeah, and it's better than, I mean, actually, I was writing my review of the new Magnificent Seven, and I just kept putting a YouTube clip of the old theme on. It's just super good. The other thing that Magnificent Seven did, I think, better than the Seventh Samurai is the villain.
Yeah.
Calvera.
Yeah, he was great.
He was, and he kind of sold that. I think he built on, I mean, what I liked about the whole setup is, and I guess it kind of comes to like a literal version when you look at something like A Bug's Life, is that they kind of treat these different classes almost as different species. And the bandits are a parasite class, basically. And the samurai and the farmers form kind of a symbiotic relationship. And what I loved about it is that you get like a very slight tinge of sympathy for the bandits when you realize that they need to rob. They're starving also.
Yeah.
They don't farm, so they're out in the woods. If they don't steal this food, they die. And obviously they could, you know, just ask and maybe get some sympathy. But, you know, that's not their nature. They're the scorpion. So I really loved Calvera because he kind of cemented that relationship. As it was almost a domestic abuse relationship between him, the parasite, and the villagers.
Yeah, and I mean, they even mention it too. Like he's like as fair as you can expect him to be, because mm-hmm. when he comes and takes all the stuff for his bandits, he leaves the farmers with, you know, enough food for them to survive, which is what makes them kind of agree to the deal at the end to kind of backstab the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, and he even lets them go too.
Yeah, he's like complete. He's pretty reasonable throughout the entire movie. Yeah. Like unexpectedly, like even in the beginning, when they first come in and like start stealing stuff, they don't kill anyone except for the one guy that charges at him with the blade. He shoots him, and then he like immediately shows regret.
Yeah, he says like, "Oh, that was stupid."
Yeah, he's like, "Ah, stupid."
Well, he is really almost like a Jimmy Conway kind of character. Like he's very practical about his theft. He wants to keep it as quiet as possible. He doesn't want trouble. But I mean, they really they kind of set up why it's not okay in that scene when, you know, he says, "Oh, there's not enough religion in the world anymore," and the guy says, "Yeah, I can see that," and he just immediately slaps him. And it's one of those perfect, like, I mean, again, like it's like domestic abuse kind of situation, you know, relationship. It's like this guy, you know, he may be, you know, he's friendly and he wants to talk to him and like treat them like friends, but it's like they're not friends. This guy absolutely will kill them if they don't give him what they want. But it gives him a great, I guess not arc, but it's that great moment where Yul Brynner kills him and he's just like dumbfounded why the hell they came back.
Yeah, because he let him go with their lives. I mean, he just took their... He even gave them their guns back.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is such a strange thing, you'd think. I mean, just... Like, try and picture the character that Peter Skarsgård plays doing, like, anything that Calvera does. And it, like, he wouldn't do anything like that because he's just, like, pure, stupid evil.
Yeah.
And has, like, no depth or character to him.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it's they're all very character-driven movies, and so I kind of kept thinking of that and comparing them and just kind of how did one handle this? You know, the first movie, Seven Samurai, didn't really have much of a villain. He was kind of... He was the boss, but you didn't really know anything about him. Second had a great villain. Third one had a shit villain. And then you look at other characters like Kikuchiyo in the first one, who's the wild card. He's not a samurai. Mm-hmm. He's a wannabe. He was my favorite character in that movie. And I loved every minute he was on screen. And then they kind of rolled him in to the Chico character in Magnificent Seven, who I fucking hated.
Oh, really? He was annoying, but I did like the idea of the character, like him and Kuchiko being like the farmers trying to move up a class like we've been talking about and like trying denying his past, but he's got some conflict there.
That was kind of among the things that I think was drawn from, that was kind of lost in translation. Because like, well, you're talking about 19th century America, everyone's born on a farm. So, and that doesn't lock you into your class the way it did in the old feudal Japan days. Another thing that falls into that category is like the very end line, which is really great in Seven Samurai, where he says, you know, we didn't win the village one, we lost, we always lost. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just repeat that line in The Magnificent Seven, but it doesn't make any sense. The whole reason that line makes sense is kind of the irony that out of all the people who survive in Seven Samurai, two of them are these old veterans who were always in losing battles and somehow survived them and fully expected that they would get killed in this battle. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of bittersweet that they're like, you know, out of everyone who survived, what we did, but once again, we lost.
Yeah, that was something I noted that was kind of lost in the 1960, the OG Mag 7, as I call it. In Seven Samurai, or Sev Sam, as I call it.
the fuck up.
They did a better job at not really making the samurai out to be, like, as glamorous.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was really
stripped down. Like, even in, like, the choice of actors, like, they're kind of, like, older or, like, overweight guys. But in OG Mag 7, they're all, you know, the Hollywood hunks of the time and like the ripped dudes, So even, yeah, even
meanwhile,
in
Mag 7 2016, it's like they're ready to go on to shoot Magic Mike 3 right after this. It's fucking Hunk City in that movie.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about the new one anymore. I just want to break down the actual quality movies. Because, I mean, yeah. I think it is a lot more interesting, Seven Samurai to OG Mag, because, like, they made the crossovers they tried to do. Some of them didn't work because of the cultural differences.
Yeah.
Another one that I noted, too, that was kind of interesting in the OG Mag was, like, the old man character, like, the wise old man character.
Yeah.
Didn't make as much sense in...
Yeah, did he even live in that village? Mexican he seemed like culture? He was shitting on them. He was like, fucking farmers are boring as hell. I'd rather die than go back and live with them.
Yeah, like, he was, right. like, intellectually above them all and, like, didn't want to hang out with them. And it just...
yeah. He was like, what does he do, though? Like, he's just some old retired guy who lives outside this village?
Yeah, it seemed like It seemed like he moved to that village or something. Like, he didn't seem like a villager.
Yeah, because also when they went to go ask him what to do, it was like, well, this guy isn't your village elder. This is just some old man that lives nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why don't you buy some guns? I was like, okay, I guess.
It's like, when you nut up. Yeah. You fucking fuzzies.
He was an amiable guy, though.
Yeah, no, he was fine. But it just, the old... like wise character makes a lot more sense in like a Chinese culture than
yeah it was Japan
Mexican American oh whoops Japanese culture.
Well, it's funny because like out. In the new one I was not sure whether Billy Rocks was supposed to be Chinese, like, you know, like a Chinese railroad worker, or if he was supposed to be Korean like the actor. And there were a couple of racial questions because again they kind of went with like a super Friends vibe or
yeah, checking all the boxes.
Yeah, to the point that actually, like I said, I thought that they had already gotten up to 7 by the time Red Harvest showed up. But I was like, oh, they didn't get a Native American. That's weird. But it was kind of weird because it was like, I don't know how these guys, again, they're doing like the goofy stuff with Chris Pratt, the dark stuff with Peter Sarsgaard. And it's like, where are they going for this? Because then, like, racially, it's like, what is this movie's world? Because... you would think between the industrialist trying to take over the town and that scene with Denzel Washington walking into town and everyone immediately produces a gun, that this was like actually attempting to be a serious remake of Blazing Saddles. Like, that's what I thought as soon as Bogue showed up. I'm like, oh, it's not bandits. It's because I was thinking of all the movies that, because you have your Pixar podcast and you did Bug's Life recently. I'm like, yeah, all these other movies, Three Amigos. Galaxy Quest, you know, all these movies that kind of take this, and I was like, oh, maybe you know, Blazing Saddles, maybe. I'm like, no, because that one's not really bandits. That one's like a businessman. And then when that guy showed up, I'm like, oh, I guess it's kind of like Blazing Saddles. And fucking Christ, why did he show up at the end? That's the even Blazing Saddles is a smarter movie because Hedley Lamarr, he's like behind the scenes, and he's kind of, you know, he's surreptitiously getting these gangs, but it's not like you can draw a clear link between him and the murder he's trying to make happen, you know?
Oh, why does Peter Skarsgård show up at the end?
Yeah, because he's a fucking businessman with a reputation, and you can't just have like, yeah, I'm just going to roll into a town of white people and slaughter them all, and that'll be fine for me. I'm just going to go back home to where the fuck I live.
Against Sacramento. I mean, yeah, it's not like he's anywhere close. Like, he went far out of his way.
Yeah, and it's
to
all
be there in person, and he wasn't even fighting, just to be there.
There's
like
no reason for him to be there, just because the guy called him chicken. And his character is someone who wouldn't give a shit about that. He's a piece of shit. He's probably called a chicken every day of his life by people who he then has to have killed.
Yeah, it'd be a lot more interesting if he like brushed that off, like as a real businessman was like, that doesn't.
Yeah, but then what would the movie
affect
be?
My
it's
bottom
like,
line.
Oh fuck, we won. We got to. I guess we got to go to Sacramento now. Go fucking murder him.
Yeah, it was weird, like, and that's the thing, too. They made the choices in this remake to have that character be at a remote location.
Yeah, that's true. He could have just lived there.
The other two had a clear reason for the character, the villains to come back.
Yeah.
And they made the choice to stray from that for no real reason.
No, just because they wanted to have a capitalist, because, ooh.
They wanted to put him in a big plantation home, a big white house, so that he could be like, oh, look at this fucking prick living in a nice house with all his fucking money. But it adds nothing to the story.
Like, why didn't they just make the town, like, also in California?
Yeah. Or, I mean, like he was there in the beginning. Just have him be there still.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
I don't know. In terms of the racial politics also, it was weird to me that they had, so the opening scene with Denzel is, you know, white people are so freaked out in whatever town. You know, I don't know why they kept labeling the towns. I didn't need to know that what town he was in. I don't remember what it was. Anyway, so
they put the names up?
Yeah, they put the names up.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, you know that they're in Rose Creek pretty soon because they say, hey, we got to fight for Rose Creek, the place we live. But then he goes to some other town, his name I don't remember. Everyone, you know, it's the exact scene from Blazing Saddles, but played straight, with just like, howdy, 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 and everyone cocks their guns, you know.
Well, and then after that, it's the exact scene from Django Unchained.
Yes, they ripped that fucking scene off completely.
Exactly the same.
And the thing is, it makes no sense in this context, because you're talking about a town where these guys are cocking their guns at the sight of a black man, and then he blows away four people, and they're like, yeah, let's see what he has to say. Maybe he had a good reason for that. Yeah, I'm sorry. He blows away, four people in the bar, and he walks out, and he's like, all right, guys, I had a good reason. It's like, fucking today they wouldn't listen to what his reason was.
I mean, yeah, it's sad but true.
Yeah, like, and so it's just like, you're not letting me... And then again, the rest of the movie, no one is scared. You know, he shows up with Billy Rocks, another minority, who apparently requires Ethan Hawke just to navigate through a white man's world. They show up in the town, and that those new town folk aren't afraid of them, even after they slaughtered 20 people. It's like there's a Comanche on the roof just shooting people, like sniping people. No one's terrified?
Yeah. It's weird. I mean, another thing I read coming into it, I think I just kind of skimmed it, but it was talking about how the remake is kind of in this, like, diverse world where they're just going to have all these different racial ethnicities together in a movie, and it's not going to really be, like, a big point of the movie. So going into it, I kind of just thought, like, okay, well, this character is going to be a Mexican and whatever. This guy's just going to be an Asian, whatever.
That's kind of what I heard, too, that they just kind of cast Denzel just because Denzel's a cool actor and he'd be awesome in the movie. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. They wouldn't, like, make a plot point out of it.
Yeah, but then they go and make a plot point out of it, out of all of it.
Yeah. And you know what? If that's going to be your movie, don't include a character who is famous for skinning 200 Native American scalps. And that's, like, what he's legendary for.
That's right. And then he doesn't bat an eye at another Comanche guy there, does he?
Yeah, and then when the other, Comanche guy kills him, I'm kind of like, fair enough.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot. He kills him.
I mean, because it's just such a... It's like, you know, if you're going to do that, it kind of has to be a black and white kind of movie. And yet they make it kind of like an oorah, you know, support the troops movie at the end with this, like, oh, these seven... were magnificent.
God, I literally laughed out loud in the theater when they said that. I was like, come on. And then I was like, well, maybe that's what they say in the other movies, and it's just kind of an ode. But no.
No, they don't.
Fucking jackass.
We just keep going to screenings of that movie, and after they say that, be like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, it's... God.
That was painful.
Watching the two originals, I just don't get... Like, I don't even know if the people who made the remake watched either of the other movies. It's like they read, like, a synopsis. It's like, okay, it's seven badass dudes saving a village. Got it. Or maybe they just watched The Bug's Life.
The thing is, they could do... I feel like if they weren't going to use the song for Magnificent Seven, it's like, if you're not going to really just, like... not remix that song, but, like, give it a big orchestra or whatever and, you know, use that song, then you don't really have to call it The Magnificent Seven. At this point, there's so many movies about that.
Yeah, and it was different enough.
Yeah.
Like, really, other than the fact that there were seven hired gunmen, like, the majority of the movie is different. I mean, there's seven hired gunmen to save a village. But
yeah, the weird thing is IMDb doesn't even list the screenwriters for the original Magnificent Seven. They only list the screenwriters for Seven Samurai, even though several plot points and like set pieces and direct lines do come from the Magnificent Seven. So I don't know if that's just IMDb is like user driven and it actually they're credited, or if it was very odd.
Wait, the new one has no screenwriters?
The new one, it does not, on IMDb, the new one doesn't list the screenwriters of the old one, only of, like, you know, based on the screenplay for. But they obviously, they did take specific lines. They did the whole joke of, you know, so far so good, the man who fell, jumped off the,
and it, the building. It really annoyed me that in the new one, he jumps off a 5-story building, but in the old one, it was a 10-story building.
Yeah.
Because it being a 10-story building makes it a better joke. So it's like, why change that detail?
Yeah, it is kind of weird. I mean, maybe because they're like, historically, how many 10-story buildings are around?
I
Five
guess.
Stories more. People would be like, a 10-story building? What is this magnificent thing I've heard of?
But I even feel like jumping off a 5-story building, I feel like there's a chance you could survive it.
No, 5-story. I mean, maybe. But
I mean, no, but it just being safe and calling it 10 story makes it a better joke.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The funny, I mean, it's like the thing is, and I guess that really is the kind of thing. And I tried to write the review of it, the written review, which you can find on hardmentoplease.com. Wow. I tried to make it more of a review of just the movie and not because it is really hard not to compare them. But it is this case that the first one was so like. Fucking it's just like a like you know like a really well balanced like structure, like everything was perfectly accounted for, even down to like the three people who survive the movie are kind of the ones who make it the saddest movie possible, because it is the two old veterans who are kind of over the hill and might as well have died, and the young guy who has to then not be able to be with his girl because they're come from two different worlds.
Yeah.
And then the 1960s movie kind of makes sense who survives. It's the, you know, the two guys who kind of started the movie. And and then the young guy who then has a happy ending because he gets to stay with the woman who definitely is like in her 30s. I don't know why they tried to pass her off like some young girl who's not been married off yet.
She was great, though.
She kind of came out of nowhere, too. The thing is, though, and in the new movie, the three guys who survive are... almost arbitrary. Like, it's so weird that, like, Denzel is a star, okay, but then Vasquez and Red Harvest, like, you know the least about.
Yeah, I think, well, I'll say about the comparison from the guys who survive in the Seven Samurai versus the Magnificent Seven original, I feel like the Mag 7 original, those ones who survive are, like, the most, they make the most sense in the terms of a movie, and, like, it being a Hollywood movie, because it's the two main actors. And then the kid who has the happy ending. Whereas...
Yeah. It's different, but it works.
Yeah. Who... I honestly don't even remember in Seven Samurai, it's the main... The head honcho and the young kid, but who's a third?
It's his old military friend. So it's Shichiroji. The real hard-ass guy. He was bald and kind of fat. I felt like he and Gorobei kind of... I felt like maybe Six Samurai. It would have been easier to remember. I always forgot.
Yeah, I thought Gorobei was his buddy.
Well, the thing it's confusing is they kind of look similar because they're kind of both the fattest guys and about the same age. And Gorobei is one of the first to join, too.
Yeah, because I thought him and the main guy were like the ones who were buddy-buddy. Like they were sleeping in the same room with the young guy. And they got up. Remember, and they were like goof. They were ragging on him a lot for being a young bitch.
I don't remember that scene. But
they did a lot of great ragging on him for being a young buck, but it was so perfect in the movie.
Oh, they had a lot of. I loved all the ragging on, especially like Kikuchiyo, who they kept making fun of him because he was a fake ass bitch.
yeah,
and it kind of worked because like he was also like a manic depressive. So
yeah,
it kind of rolled off him, but it also like incited him to do insane things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the thing
is,
there was no fucking equivalent of that guy in the new movie.
No, not at all. And there was no, the, even the, like, the connection of the samurai made a lot more sense because they were, like, an elite group of guys who kind of all had a shared experience that the new one, and even to a lesser extent, the old OG one, didn't quite make as much sense that they, like, had that connection.
I did like how the old one had that one scene where they talk about, you know, kind of like, you know, when you're a jet all the way or whatever, where they're kind of describing like why it's awesome and also why it sucks to be like, you know, a cool gunslinger, which is almost like a meta commentary on like just the mythologizing of Old West gunslingers in Hollywood to that point.
Yes. And I loved that scene, and that, I think that scene really made the movie for me. And I think that
was great, yeah, because it did give it a lot of pathos.
Right. And, I mean, I think Seven Samurai kind of does that throughout the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
yeah.
not quite one scene that I can remember doing it, but that's my main criticism of what's missing in the remake is there's nothing like that. There's
no... No, it's more just chumminess throughout.
There's chumminess, but then there's also just no, like, underlying message.
Yeah, there's like there Seven really Samurai. Is no thesis to the movie.
No, nothing. Seven Samurai was trying to show like the real effects of violence and war on the everyday people. And the OG Mag 7 was kind of doing the same, but also like breaking down the ideas of masculinity in like a violent world where mm-hmm. it's like really the responsibility of being like a functioning adult with family is what really is where the, you know,
yeah.
real courage
well,
lies.
Like,
and then the new one, there's
Bronson,
nothing.
Of all people, gives that lesson to the kids where he spanks the kids. Which is like, whoa, buddy, over the line. And tells them that, you know, being a father and having responsibility is the real bravery. And being like a dickhead who throws his life away to be a gunfighter is easier.
Right. And I do think that, like, they said it really well in the OG Mag 7, but they definitely showed it a lot more in The Seven Samurai, but none of that is there in the remake.
No, it isn't. You don't have the character that connects you to the that, you know, the connection character. You don't have, you know, you don't have a romance, which in Seven Samurai, and I'm not a big guy on romance movies, but when the young guy spies the girl, I was actually like relieved because it's such kind of a not a dreary movie, but there's a lot of dread, and mm-hmm. it's just based on kind of death, and it's kind of negative.
So dark,
I was really I was really relieved. I'm like, oh yeah, we could use a little love story here. That's good. I want to see where this goes.
Yeah.
And then in Mag 7 OG, it was kind of just thrown in there. Like, he just finds a girl, and then
mm-hmm.
she wants the dick, basically, in a later scene.
Yeah, and kind of a weird way that...
It was really weird. I laughed out loud when she's sneaking up on the kiss for him, like, looking him straight in the eyes, not blinking. It was very unsexy.
Yeah, unsexy. It just felt like, really, like, the screenwriter was just like, oh, yeah, this is what I want. some hot lady just throw herself at me when I'm saying, no, I can't take it.
It's yeah.
like, that's kind of, yeah, it's kind of creepy. But
yeah, some horned up Mexican farmer's daughter.
Yeah, I mean, Seven
but
Samurai
then the new,
did
the
it.
New one, I actually was, I was in more of my default setting when I was like, oh, Jesus, Chris Pratt going to fucking try to woo the widow? And he kind of does, but then like
yeah.
nothing comes of it.
That was actually probably the most surprising part of their newest movie, is that there was no scene where Chris Pratt macks on poor man.
Well,
Jennifer Lawrence.
He kind of tried to when she was like practicing her gunplay, and he was like, look how fucking good I am at guns. Bam, 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 bam. But then that scene, I don't even think had like a resolution to it. I think it just ended.
I mean, she just kind of shows that she's a tough lady more and denies him, and I guess that was just the end of it.
Yeah, and it was also like, all right, so the school teacher knows how to shoot. Why the fuck are all of us here? You guys have like 40 rifles. Like, certainly other people in the town can shoot if you can.
Yeah. She's like, oh, I had a father. It was like, everyone had a father.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, most people.
Yeah, so there was really not. I mean, the thing was, similar to you, I kind of enjoyed it walking out of it, and I actually kind of liked it more than the 1960 version at the moment, because for me, I had watched the 1960s ones right after watching Seven Samurai, so for me, it was a lot of glaring, like, just pantomiming the original without much point.
Yeah.
And that stood out to me a lot, and I liked that the new one really didn't do that. You know, to its credit, it did step away and really only take little bits and pieces from the other movies. So it kind of made it easier to see as its own movie, although it did fuck up that knife scene, the knife duel. God damn
it. What do you mean?
Well, because the knife duel was a cool, one of the coolest adaptations in the original Magnificent Seven, because, I mean, for one thing, Seven Samurai obviously did it best, where the guys are dueling with, like, bamboo swords, and then the guy's like, oh, if that was steel, you'd be dead. And he's like, bullshit, and he pulls steel on him, and then he's like, don't do it, I'm gonna kill you, and then he goes, and it's an awesome scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Magnificent Seven kind of, I thought they adapted that pretty well, I mean, given the fact that it wouldn't really make sense to just replace that with guns, where they, the guy, like, doesn't believe this rumor that this guy is faster with throwing a knife than anyone else is at shooting a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do the contest. The guy's like, horse shit, I won. And then he forces him to do it. So kind of similar. Whereas in the new one, it's like they both shot at first. And so...
Yeah, it's true. They both start with guns. And for no reason, he switches to a blade or a hairpick.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's like the whole setup of the scene is that it's really interesting that this guy is so good with a knife that he can beat you with a gun, and that's why you would go up against it. Why would you, I mean, if this guy's really fast with a gun, okay. I mean, that's why it's so wounding to the pride is, oh, this guy's faster with a knife than I'm with a gun? No way. I mean, if he's just faster with a gun, who cares?
Yeah. And then why switch to the hair piece, and why even, like, allow that? Like, if you're like, if I was the opponent, I'd be like, why are you doing dropping your gun? Like, this is a gun battle.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, then... he has no reason to believe that guy even has a weapon. So it's like, am I just going to shoot you? That's the resolution here.
And then he does the Shanghai Noon and, like, stands completely perpendicular.
How about you do it your way and I do it my way?
Which I thought was really weird. And I was waiting for someone to call him out. It's like, you don't do that in a gunfight. And thankfully,
why
they didn't
do that. Why
don't
you face me like a man?
Yeah.
Speaking of fucking excellent westerns.
Yeah, we got to watch that movie again.
Yeah. Flawless. So let's compare Seven Samurai to Magnificent Seven to Shanghai Noon now.
Yeah, anything but the fucking remake.
Yeah. So what would you say? Did you say how you thought? I would rank them. I mean, I didn't think this going into it. I actually thought going into it, I was going to respect Seven Samurai as, like, the source material and for what it was, but find it quite boring, and then really like Magnificent Seven 1960, and then not like Magnificent Seven 2016. Right after seeing Magnificent Seven 2016, I quite liked it, and I thought it was better than the 1960s version, but not better than Samurai. But now my tastes have, I guess, reoriented into what is probably the correct, which is the Seven Samurai is best, Magnificent Seven beneath that, and then the new one. I mean, at this point, yeah, I've talked myself into just hating the movie.
Yeah, it's very easy to talk yourself into that.
Is there anything you liked about it?
Vincent D'Onofrio, he was fun.
He was fun. I liked him. I liked Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hunt.
What did I say? Oh, Ethan Hunt. Yeah, Mission Impossible.
Man, Tom Cruise would be great in that role.
he was apparently going to, I think, be the lead, which might have been terrible.
Yeah, Denzel was great. I mean,
yeah, Denzel was good. I liked it. I mean, the thing was, like, Denzel was Denzel. Chris Pratt was Chris Pratt. Ethan Hawke and Vincent D'Onofrio played pretty cool characters.
They were characters.
Everyone else had no speaking lines, which is way to go, guys. The three of the four minorities in the group.
Yeah, that's what pisses me off. It's like I was going into it thinking it was like this new post-racial movie.
Yeah,
but it's now still. I mean,
well, there's that moment too when the old villainous Comanche guy is gonna kill the girl, and then Red Harvest comes up behind him and they're going to have a duel. And I leaned over to my wife and I was like, is this okay? Like, is this all right to, like, you're setting these guys up to have a, like, you know, an Indian fight or whatever?
Some, like, perverse Mandingo fight?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I don't know. Something just feels off about it. And it's partially because this guy's barely spoken a word.
Yeah, it felt weird. Yeah, the fact that they even had, like, the bad Indian character was really just a setup for that scene.
Yeah, I guess. And then the so good stupid. Guy was kind of like the noble savage, which is kind of like, you guys really couldn't have given him a personality.
Yeah, it was really weird, because in that fight, the Red Harvest guy is like, you traitor. But it's like, what did he... Why is he traitor and what are you? Like, I didn't get that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you're both fighting for white people. I mean, like, how much time has this guy spent here where he really understands, like, what's happening?
I mean, yeah, I exactly.
guess as a Native American, maybe he's got a soft spot for people getting pushed off their land. But, I mean, wouldn't he generally dislike homesteaders anyway because they're land that was originally, like, his people's?
Yeah, like, that can't be his reasoning, or he would just...
And he's fucking fighting with a guy who scalped Native Americans.
Right, and they're buddies, and they have, like...
What would it take for you to fight alongside someone who scalped, like, I guess not members of your family, but just, like, anybody? Just, like, people who lived in your town?
I mean, yeah.
And for money, not because he was in a war.
But that's the other thing, too. Did they even offer him money? Like, he just joins up for no reason. For no reason.
Yeah, no. Just... I'm saying Jack Horn, his character, is he scalped for, like, a bounty. Like, you would do with, like, animals. Like, a wolf pelt.
So no, I'm... Yeah.
One of the most disgusting things you could really do. And yeah, this guy is famous for doing it. He made his fortune doing that.
And they just kind of goof on it.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you gonna take these guys' scalps?
Yeah, he even said something about, like, about Red Harvest, like, hey, stop eyeing his hairline, and I didn't get that joke for a minute.
Oh, I'm just now getting that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's disgusting.
Holy shit, yeah, that's really fucked up. And the fact that he was right there, Red Harvest, and he took it, is really weird.
Yeah, he, like, took the joke and turned it around, or maybe, I don't know, either way.
I think he just laughed at it. But I was saying, though, like, what... One thing I noted that was funny was each movie, the reward for the samurai increased. So the first one, it was just like food and shelter. The second one, it was food, shelter, and $20. And then the third one, it seemed like a way more money. Yeah, well, cool Jackson.
Was
and then
it?
The latest
was it? Was
one
it
was
money?
Like,
what did they give?
It was
them?
Like a bag of fucking coins.
It was a bag of jewels. I don't know how the money
coins.
Works.
I mean, they didn't show what it was, but it was like a bag heavy with coins. I mean, Chris Pratt, they bought his horse, and it was, what, $25 to get the horse back?
That's true. And they were, like, drinking the whole time, and I was like, you guys are paying... I don't know how the money works. I did know that it did annoy me in the 1960s version that they were giving the $20 each, because I went, like, to check out how much money that would be, and it would be, like, several hundred dollars for each of them.
Hmm.
So I was like, well, these guys aren't quite as poor as the guys who are like, hey, I have rice... How would you like some rice? Please help me.
Yeah, we can offer rice and that's it. I mean, with each movie, I feel like it lost some of the detail of the villagers. I mean, definitely a huge drop off from the OG mag to the new mag.
Yeah.
The villagers were it was just the lady, just the hot chick.
And yeah, it was pretty the problem is because it was basically just her story, and because Denzel didn't pay a price, the message of the story is revenge is good, and you should get revenge.
That was it. That was the entire crux of the movie. So this one chick wants revenge because her dumbass husband stood up to, like, 12 dudes with guns without a gun.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, all these guys died, I mean, even the villains, I mean, that's 200 people are dead. You know, these living legends are dead. The half your townsfolk are dead. But the eventual message was, it was good that we did this. I got revenge. This was magnificent.
Yeah, how magnificent these people. That's the other thing. Like, I liked in the Seven Samurai and OG Mag, it was like a reasonable amount of baddies. It was like 40, I think, in each.
Yeah.
So like the loss of life isn't as catastrophic, but in the new one, it's like several hundred people die.
Yeah, but it's also easy to follow. I mean, the old one went to the extreme of they literally produced a list and said, this is how many villains there are. Yeah. Every time we have a skirmish, we're going to show you how many are left. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's really great. I know exactly what's going on. Whereas obviously, you know, even the OG mag was, you didn't really know how, I mean, you knew there was like 30, I think, guns, but you didn't know in the gunfight, unless you were like Rain Man, how many had died yet. Dude, and the new one, fucking Christ, they didn't even, Denzel Washington does not even ask, how many guys are we going up against? He's just like, you need protection? Okay. No, he doesn't ask. He doesn't even come up with the number, Jesus. We need seven guys. What? Which is the whole point, is like the minimum that we can get this done is seven. He just is like, well, let me ask my friends, and then if we happen upon like a Native American on a vision quest, we'll ask him to join too. And if not, fuck it.
Yeah, he was just Nick Fury recruiting the Avengers at that point, and like that was the extent of people he knew.
Yeah, and there was nothing in that scene. Like, there was kind of some tension in the Seven Samurai version, because it was like, these guys have very little offer. Are they going to be able to get... I mean, obviously they do, but, you know. That's good filmmaking, though, that makes you kind of doubt it.
Yeah, that was the other thing I noted. Like, with each new movie, there was a lot less time devoted to the recruitment of the Seven.
Well, the first movie was, like, 3.5 hours long.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in some regards, it kind of had to be to tackle everything it was trying to. I mean, I guess you could just be trying to be less ambitious, but...
Yeah, well, that's why I think you can kind of forgive the newer movie or the 1960 version for not being as thorough in everything, because it was, like, half the length.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Yeah.
That's why I think the Seven Samurai is always going
to
win.
But it was annoying to lose the detail, though, where you don't have the motivation of the characters, why they're joining up. You don't have any of the planning of, like, why do we need seven guys? I don't know. How many are we going up against? They don't know. And they don't know that because it's all a big trick. Is the guy's going to bring a Gatlin gun and, you know, because you have to have big, big, big. It's got to be like a post. Yeah, I mean, I feel like you probably could, you know, put a pin in, like, you know, the Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers, and say, like, after this, movies have to have big battles. You can't have small battles anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the nature of remakes. It's like, okay, we got to just make it better, bigger, better. But it's like, that loses everything of the movie. So it's just, you're just pumping air into this balloon, and it's not even the same form anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's what I don't get is, I don't know if it's, like, really hard to convince. You'd think it'd be easier to convince producers, say, hey, we want to go small. And it's like, oh, that'll cost way less money. Because by going small, you do kind of put a focus on, like, oh, wow, this is something really hard to do. And this is, you know, you kind of feel more, like, connected to it.
I mean, the sad thing is, it's just that's not ever going to happen. Like, you're going to make and you're going to make it as appealing to the general audience as possible, which is just more action, less focus, and it's going to make a shit ton of money.
You know what's funny is, when they were rebooting Batman with Batman Begins, I think the studio had intended to go small. They wanted to do like a much... I mean, they had some weird ideas. Like, they wanted Batman to be like homeless or something, and he made the Batmobile like from like junkyard parts.
Shopping carts. I'd watch that.
No, but basically, I mean, they wanted to go small and make kind of like a, you know, a more of a thriller. And Nolan was, and mm-hmm. that's why they got Nolan, I guess, because they were like, hey, we'll do kind of more of a more dramatic thriller psychologically. And he was like, no, we're making a blockbuster. So I guess he had the chance to like turn things in a different direction, but didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Begins was good, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was a good blockbuster. For sure. We could talk about that ad nauseum.
By the same token, I guess, what's the guy's name? Glenn, Who plays Dennis on It's Always
Glenn
Sunny?
Howerton?
Glenn Howerton. He was apparently in talks to play Star-Lord in Guardians of the Galaxy. And if that had happened, Chris Pratt would probably still be relegated to a comedy career and all would be right with the world.
Yeah, he'd still be kind of pudgy. It's still funny. And
I don't know if that movie would have worked with Glenn Howerton, just because I mean personally I would have just seen Dennis the whole time. But given the fact that now I just see Chris Pratt the whole time, and that Guardians of the Galaxy is probably a decent movie to just sacrifice because it was kind of shitty anyway, that would have been fine.
Well, I haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy, but it sounds like exactly the kind of action movie that Chris Pratt should be in, which is kind of like trying to parody action movies of the same genre, of the same type.
It is kind of that. It's kind of the whole joke throughout basically the entire movie is just like, wouldn't it be weird if, like, in a big serious sci-fi superhero movie, someone said dick?
Yeah.
Like,
and that's
people
fine.
Wouldn't do that in those kind of movies. yeah, I mean, it was fine. It was just kind of tiresome and, like, really stupid.
Oh. But I feel like that's the movie I would say, like, okay, Chris Pratt's in this role. That makes sense. But, like, putting him in Mag 7 just seems like, hey, it's his.
Well, would
he's
this
hot.
Movie have been that much better without him in it?
Would it have better without him in it? Yes. 100%.
No, but I mean, would it have been better to the point of becoming good?
No, but there's not one actor change he could have made to make it good that would have taken the entire script rewriting. But
that's true, yeah. I feel like it wouldn't have taken that much because I did like the gunplay. I liked a decent amount of the characters. I mean, if I'm looking through it, I think that I liked the characters in Seven Samurai. I liked all of them basically, other than that guy who I couldn't remember who survived. I really liked Kikuchiyo. I really liked the leader, Kanbei. He was awesome.
Yeah, so good.
Kyuzo, the badass swordsman, was... I was just so looking forward to just him cutting someone in every scene.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Or just like Kikuchiyo had that massive sword. I was like, fuck yes, let's get down to this. I want to see this in action. I didn't like that many characters in the old Mag 7.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
well, I guess they were.
I was more like okay with them, except for Chico, who I really hated.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they weren't like. I mean, I liked them all, but I guess they weren't as fleshed out. Maybe as Seven Samurai. I mean, it's hard because, yeah. Like we said, Seven Samurai is like double the length.
Yeah.
So, it just kind of lends itself to a lot more exploration of everything. Which I guess it isn't something you can say is like a bad thing or a good thing in the OG Mag 7.
Yeah, well, they.
But I mean, I like the
time
characters.
On that. I liked that character. What is it called? Character establishing moment where they ride the Native American guy to the funeral. And it's like, all right.
Yes, I love that scene.
I buy that these guys have a sense of justice. They aren't really scared of dying. They're like willing to take a job for basically no reason.
Yeah, they're badass gunmen.
Yeah, so that kind of drives the movie. Whereas Denzel, it's like, well, why don't we just rip off the scene from Django Unchained? It's like a movie from, what, like 3 years ago? You can't do that.
Oh, and Chris Pratt just happens to be there. I mean, yeah, I loved that scene in OG Mag because it was so tense, too.
Yeah.
It's like, I really like just the scenes. Maybe because I'm a simpleton, it was really easy to follow. It's like, okay, they're just moving this object from here to there, but there's baddies along the entire route, and it's just going to be super tense, but like short and like very clear goals. And then also introduced Chico, where he like sees these guys being fucking badasses, and he's like, I want to be that.
Yeah, that's true. No, it was good. It was a good scene. And there was not a single scene like that in the new one. And that's
no.
a shame.
And I mean, to be honest, other than like the Kyuzo introduction in Seven Samurai, there wasn't as well. I guess the scene with the thief to introduce the first samurai, Kanbei, whatever his name is. I guess that was
that was a perfect moment with him pretending to be a monk. It's like, all right, he doesn't care about like his honor as a samurai because he's shaving his head, which We all know from that masterpiece Shanghai Noon, Bad News.
Yeah, he doesn't care about that. It shows he's got, like, excellent strategy. He's a badass swordsman. Yeah. He's smarter than anybody else in the friggin' kingdom. That was a good introduction.
He swings low.
Yeah,
that's perfect. I mean, that basically sets what the whole movie's going to be. It's like, this guy's going to, you know, figure out a way to do this because he's a good-hearted guy who's willing to do what it takes.
Right, and he's going to do it, like, in a thoughtful way. Like, he's going to sit there and think of the best strategy and not just run in like the wild card Cuckoo.
Yeah. He was fucking awesome, though. I loved, like, you know, any scene with him, and it was just, like, electric.
Come by, the main guy?
No, Kikuchiyo.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, he was a freaking wild card. You didn't know what he was going to do. I love characters like that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, just the way he, like, bullied people by just, like, getting up in their face and just kind of staring at him, too, is just, it's just perfect.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid to just, like, call anybody out.
It makes me really want to watch Yojimbo, because that's... basically, it's just a fistful of dollars, what that was based off of, and he plays Clint Eastwood's role.
Oh, okay. Yeah, after watching that, and then I did a little bit a deep dive on Kurosawa, it's like, man, I really want to watch all of his movies now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So maybe we'll get into some of those next time.
Next time.
All right, so let's wrap this up. Seven Samurai, we agree that's the best?
Yeah, I mean... I really wanted to want, like, the OG Mag 7, but after this discussion and more thought, it's Seven Samurai's head and shoulders above.
Yeah. I mean, it was good, though.
It was good.
OG Mag 7 is still a quality movie.
Great movie.
I'll watch it again.
I would definitely watch. I would watch all of them. Well, not the new one. I would watch the old
ones. Yeah, I don't think I'd watch the new one again. I mean, if it was on TV, I might watch it, but, yeah, no, it's one of those things that it's like, it's like fruit stripe gum. It's like it tastes pretty good as soon as you bite into it, and like 10 seconds later, the flavor's gone.
If the new one was on TV, I would turn off the TV, I would unplug the TV, and I would throw the TV in the garbage.
And then you would tweet at Chris Pratt and tell him why.
Thanks, Chris Pratt. Go back to sleep on your millions of dollars and your beautiful wife.
All right. So, guess what, bitches?
Bitches.
HardMentToPlease.com is live. You can go there. We've got written reviews. We've got the podcasts are up.
It's getting lit.
Yeah. So you can follow us at HardMentToPlease on Twitter, or you can do our individual accounts at Justicide and at SuperRapAttack.
Yes, sir.
If you have questions or hate mail, send those to HardMentToPlease@gmail.com. That's all we've got for today, listener. Good night, and we love you.
Love you. Mwah.